Well, our subject is Armageddon and Ezekiel 38 through 39. The big question of this battle is, when does it happen? The most common views are that it happens either before the tribulation or in the middle. I think for some time the middle was the most common. Most I hear today are probably think it happens before. Now, along with the... let me just mention a few other things to get you familiar with the ideas. Along with the views of the Ezekiel war and the possibility of this war being fulfilled before the tribulation, in recent years a view has been put forward of Psalm 83. There's the one you read, you said. Psalm 83, that it is prophetic of the future. This prophecy involves the countries immediately around Israel. And it is believed that most likely this battle will happen before the tribulation, as well as the Ezekiel 38 one. And then there is another prophecy, Isaiah 17, which talks about Damascus and that it will be destroyed and never be a city again. And that hasn't happened yet. One of the oldest cities in the world that has been had occupants all for so many years. And it is believed that this will happen before the tribulation as well. So let me mention something important here. One of the objections to any of these prophecies being fulfilled before the tribulation puts imminency on question. The teaching of the imminent return of Christ means that he could come at any time. So David Hawking, for instance, believes that the Ezekiel war will happen after the rapture, but before the tribulation. In that way, the timing does not affect imminency. Now, I have pondered the matter of imminency, and you could send me an email or a text after this if it raises any questions for you. That is what I'm going to say now. We had a few Bible studies on Ezekiel war some time ago and discussed imminency, and one of our folk asked something like this: Israel became a nation before the rapture. Does that put imminency in question? Are you with me? Are you with me? It's prophesied and happened before the rapture. Does that put imminency in question? Ponder that. Actually, a lot of prophecies have been fulfilled and are being fulfilled right at this present time. Jesus prophesied of the destruction of the Jewish temple that happened 70 AD. Does that put imminency in question? No. You see, you can think about this. It seems to me that imminency means this. We are not told that certain prophecies have to be fulfilled before Christ comes. Do you follow that? We are to be ready for Christ's return at all times. Scripture is clear on that. I wonder if you're ready today. Are you ready right now? God has not told us what prophecies will happen before the rapture takes place. We know some have been fulfilled. We are told to be ready at all times. So does imminency mean that no prophecies will be fulfilled before Christ returns? Here is what we must remember. We have not been told what prophecies will be fulfilled before Christ returns. We were not told Israel had to become a nation before the rapture or any other way. How much of prophecy will be fulfilled before the rapture is not for us to know. What is for us to know is that we must be ready at all times. We have never been told of anything that must happen before Jesus comes to take his own home. We get the idea of imminency from Jesus' own words when he told the believer to be ready at all times because you don't know the day or the hour. He told us that no one knows the day or the hour, and so we are when he will return. And he said that included himself. Mark 13:32 says, "But of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father." So could the Ezekiel war, Psalm 83 and Isaiah 17 be fulfilled before the rapture? Just as Israel became a nation before the rapture, it is possible for these events to happen before the rapture as well, is it? You can send me a text or if you have any thoughts on this. So if the Bible said that any of these would happen before, then imminency would be in question. As it is, Jehovah God himself will decide when the rapture happens. If you remember the Pentecost message, I proposed that God will blow the trumpet for the second and last time that he blows it, and it will be the signal for Christ to come. So I think Christ is waiting for God to blow the trumpet. However, I believe that these events will happen after the tribulation begins, and thus imminency is not in question from my perspective. In the first message, we were introduced to the book of Ezekiel. Ezekiel 33 through 37 gives us numerous prophecies of Israel's restoration. By the way, we don't notice it. We are living in the most exciting times, prophetically speaking, ever existed. So Ezekiel 33 through 37 speaks of Israel's restoration. We have seen that and are still seeing that. You can keep up with the Israeli news and you will see more and more Jews coming to Israel from all over the world. So we're considering especially the battle described in 38 through 39 and where this battle is prophesied to occur. Now I want to give my personal view of events in the tribulation to show where I believe Ezekiel 38 through 39 will happen. So we're going to take an overview of the tribulation and then the details. All of this will help fix these prophecies more clearly in our minds. So I want to now give us the context of Ezekiel's war, and I will do so by giving an overview of world governments and the governments that exist just before Armageddon. So I will give a brief overview and then go through the tribulation in a little more detail to show where I think Psalm 83 happens as well, and several other things. So for an overview, turn to Daniel chapter 2, which prophesies the governments of the world from Daniel's day until the end of the tribulation. You will remember the dream Nebuchadnezzar had and how he was going to destroy all the wise men if they could not tell him both the dream and the interpretation. So Daniel saved the day. He and his friends prayed. Just imagine, the king said, tell me the dream and the interpretation. And so Daniel and his friends prayed about this because they would have lost their life as well if they hadn't been able to tell Nebuchadnezzar. And so the Lord revealed the dream to him. So verse 14, Daniel chapter 2. Then with counsel and wisdom, Daniel answered Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree from the king so urgent? Then Arioch made the decision known to Daniel. So Daniel went in and asked the king to give him time that he might tell the king the interpretation. Then Daniel went to his house and made the decision known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they might seek mercies from the God of heaven concerning this secret, so that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then the secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. So Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank you and praise you, O God of my fathers, you who have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we asked of you, for you have made known to us the king's demand, Therefore, Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus to him, "Do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Take me before the king, and I will tell the king the interpretation." Then Arioch quickly brought Daniel before the king and said thus to him, "I have found a man of the captives of Judah who will make known to the king the interpretation." The king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, "Are you able to make known the dream which I have seen and its interpretation?" Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, "The secret which the king has demanded, the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, and the soothsayers cannot declare to the king. But there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head upon your bed were these. As for you, O king, thoughts came to your mind while on your bed about what would come to pass after this. And he who reveals secrets has made known to you what will be. But as for me, this secret has not been revealed to me because I have more wisdom than anyone living, but for our sakes who make known the interpretation to the king, that you may know the thoughts of your heart. You, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image, this great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. This image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. You watched while a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found, and the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is the dream. Now we will tell you the interpretation of it before the king." So let me show you this image, if we could have the overhead at this time. And it's on the back of your bulletins, and you can write down some of the dates if you like. Verse 37, "You, O king, are a king of kings, for the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. And wherever the children of men dwell, or the beasts of the field and the birds of the heaven, he has given them into your hand and has made you ruler over them all. You are this head of gold." So on the overhead, you see that the kingdom represented by the head is from 539 BC to 330 BC. This was the Babylonian Empire. We know these dates from secular history. Verse 39, "But after you shall arise another kingdom inferior to yours, then another, a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth." So on the overhead, you will see that the second kingdom is in power from 339 to 330 BC. This was the Medes and the Persians. So you have the arms left and right, the two. So it did not last very long. In 330 BC, Greece became the world power, and they ruled until 63 BC, verse 40. "And the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything, and like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others." This was the Roman Empire. It ruled from 63 BC. Anybody know how long? No, it's okay. I wouldn't know either. Somebody asked me. 476 AD. Rome ruled from 63 BC, but the kingdom began in 625 BC. When Nebuchadnezzar was ruling, this kingdom was already starting. Verse 41, "Whereas you saw the feet and the toes partly of potter's clay and partly of iron," to me, you know what that is? Democracy. Very weak, partly strong, partly weak. "The kingdom shall be divided, yet the strength of iron shall be in it, just as you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. As you saw iron mixed with ceramic clay, they will mingle with the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, just as iron does not mix with clay. So in the feet of this image, we see what is referred to by prophecy students, you're talking about the feet now, the revived Roman Empire, 10 toes, 10 kingdoms. I believe the Antichrist will be the leader of the nations involved. I expect that these nations are republics or democracies, and I don't understand all the difference between them. You can study that. But they're elected leaders. The rule of this man, I expect that these nations are countries like Canada and the United States. It's possible that the Antichrist will come from Canada. I think it's more probable he'll come from the USA. You've probably never heard that before. You'll hear some other things. You can chuck whatever you don't like. I think it's possible he could come from the United States of America. Just check to see who's doing all the work with making peace over there today and in past years. Verse 44, and in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. By the way, in the days of these kings, he is already doing this. If you are a true believer, you are part of that kingdom that will strike this image on the feet. He will set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. When the first world empire was in power, already other leaders were beginning a new one, and eventually they ruled. In the days when these kingdoms rule, God will be in the process of setting up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, and it will stand forever. So right now, he is in that process, and every true believer is a member of that final kingdom that will destroy all the others. This is the kingdom of the Messiah. And in Revelation 19, we see this rock coming down to earth and smashing the image on the feet. This rock comes on a white horse. And that happens at Armageddon. That's our subject. Verse 45, inasmuch as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, the gold, the great God has made known to the kings what will come to pass after this. The dream is certain, and its interpretation is sure. The Lord Jesus strikes the feet and the toes, and the whole of the man's kingdoms comes crashing down. The kingdom the rock strikes is the revived Roman Empire. And I believe it is made up of nations like Britain and Canada, the USA, etc. And note the last words, the dream is certain and the interpretation is sure. Now, if you look at that statue, I believe that the Ezekiel war happens when the rock, which is Christ, strikes the image on the feet. I also believe this happens at the end of the tribulation in the Battle of Armageddon. I may point out where the view I hold answers some of the difficulties that we had in another message, and then later I want to try to answer all the difficulties. Now, I will give the order of events as I see them. We're going to look at this in a little more detail now. I'm just going to look at the tribulation or shortly before and to Armageddon. And you will understand that I am not saying this is the way it will be, but this is what I see that will possibly take place. What I will do is cover the tribulation in brief and show where both Ezekiel 38 and 39 and Psalm 83 happen in my view. It is correct that at the Battle of Armageddon, the whole world comes against Israel. Let me give some scriptures for that so that you have them. Turn to Zechariah 14 while I read a few others. The first is Joel 3:1-2. For behold, in those days and at that time, when I bring back the captives of Judah and Jerusalem, I will also gather all nations and bring them to the valley of Jehoshaphat, that's Jerusalem, and I will enter into judgment with them there on account of my people, my heritage Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations. They have also divided up my land. Zephaniah 3:8, I'll get to your passage shortly, says this: therefore, wait for me, says the Lord, until the day I rise up for plunder. My determination is to gather the nations to my assembly of kingdoms, to pour on them my indignation, all my fierce anger. All the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy. Then in Zechariah 12:1-3, we have this: the burden of the word of the Lord against Israel. Thus says the Lord God, who stretches out the heavens, lays the foundation of the earth, and forms the spirit of man within him. Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of drunkenness to all the surrounding peoples when they lay siege against Judah and Jerusalem. And it shall happen in that day that I will make Jerusalem a very heavy stone for all people. By the way, it's been a fairly heavy stone already for quite a few years. All who would heave it away will surely be cut in pieces, though all nations of the earth are gathered against it. Our subject is that all the nations come against Israel. Now to your passage, Zechariah 14:1-3. Behold, the day of the Lord is coming, and your spoil will be divided in your midst. For I will gather all the nations to battle against Jerusalem. The city shall be taken, the houses rifled, and the women ravaged. Half of the city shall go into captivity, but the remnant of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then the Lord will go out and fight against those nations as he fights in the day of battle. So it is true that the whole world comes against Israel in the end. So in going through the tribulation, we will begin at the rapture, then look at some of the events in the tribulation, and last at the battle of Armageddon. Hopefully that will give you a picture, a bigger picture. So in the great program of God, I see the rapture of the church as the next great event. So you probably don't have room to jot this down. Next time I'll give you, we're not going to get very far. Next time I'll give you a bigger spot to jot this down if you wish. So I do not see the Psalm 83 war and Ezekiel's war as happening before the tribulation. We are now in the last days of the last days for the church. 69 of Daniel's 70 weeks came to a close when Christ was crucified. We have historical evidence for that. The 70th week has never yet happened. No history gives record of the prophecy of the 70th week. What we do have and have had is 2,000 years of church history. You see it on the overhead. And the evidence of that is in history, and it shows we are still in the church age. Then, second, I believe the Antichrist will be revealed after the rapture. I think who the Antichrist is revealed when some man is able to make peace in Israel. Nobody has been able to do that so far. Daniel 9:27 says he will confirm or make a strong covenant with many for 1 week. I believe he will not be revealed until after the rapture. Now, if he's revealed and you see it before, you say, well, Pastor Phil was wrong. 2 Thessalonians 2:1-4 says this: now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to him, we ask you not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if from us, as though the day of Christ had come. Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself. Here's the Antichrist. opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. That happens right in the middle of the tribulation. Now, I view the day of Christ that's spoken of here as the time the church spends with Christ in heaven. That day does not begin until our gathering together to him has happened. You will remember that I told you that the falling away, what do I view the falling away to be? The rapture, the departure. I think the departure is the best word for it here. So who is the Antichrist? What country does he come from? Is he the leader of some country? Daniel prophesied of four world governments. The first was Babylon, which was in power in the days of Daniel. It ruled from 625 to 539 BC. Then we have the Medes and the Persians, and they ruled from 539. By the way, Iran was called Persia until not too awful long ago. Then after them was Greece, and it ruled from 330 to 63 BC. And then came Rome, and it ruled for about 1,000 years. I understand. I don't know which form. Now, the fourth world power is revived before Jesus returns. So in Daniel's image, the last stage of this empire is indicated by the 10 toes. The toes picture 10 kings, and we do not know yet who they will be. But the Antichrist will be the head of these 10 kings and will form the world government during the tribulation, or he'll be the head of it. Now, I tend to think that the Antichrist will be a man from some democratic country or a republic. I wonder if he will not be something like Klaus Schwab. It's possible. Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum. Someone who is not necessarily the head of a country, but who runs countries. It's possible. It may not be. He may be the head of a country. It may not either. I think in the coalition of countries of which the Antichrist is the head will be democratic or republic countries like Britain, USA, Canada, etc. We think sometimes, well, you know, Canada and the US, they're kind of off the scene. They may be running the world through the Antichrist. The reason I think the democratic or republican countries will form the world government is because of the prophecy of Nebuchadnezzar's dream that Daniel interpreted. Rome is pictured as iron mixed with clay. And I think democracy has its roots in Rome. And when Christ comes, he is pictured as a rock. He strikes the statue in the feet, and the whole of mankind's government comes to an end. And the place, if you look at the image, the place he strikes is the feet. Well, you strike the feet, everything else comes down. Now, rather than seeing such countries as Canada and the USA as not having much impact in the world government, I think that someday from within those countries may well come the Antichrist, and he will rule the world. I do not think it will be Klaus Schwab, but his way of working could be a forerunner of what will happen in that time. However that will be, when the Antichrist is revealed, the tribulation will begin, and one of the greatest things he will accomplish is that he will make peace in Israel. So we have the rapture, then the Antichrist is revealed, then the 70th week, the tribulation begins. And if you look at the statue of Daniel, what we look at now is pictured by the feet of the image. That's the time period of the 70th week. Daniel 9:27 speaks of the 70th week. It says this: "Then he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week, but in the middle of the week he shall bring an end to sacrifice and offering, and on the wing of abomination shall be one who makes desolate, even until the consummation which is determined is poured out on the desolate." Now this time begins as a time of peace. 1 Thessalonians 5, 1 through 3 says, "But concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you. For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. For when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape." The tribulation enters with a time that looks like all is peace and safety from here on. No doubt this happens when the peace pact of the Antichrist is accepted. Never has the future looked brighter than at that time. But what has happened is that the tribulation is underway. This is pictured by the white horse in Revelation chapter 6. You know that Christ rides the real white horse. Pictures peace. Real peace comes when Christ comes on a white horse. But before this 70th week begins, the church is taken up to glory, in my understanding. This is the great catching up of 1 Thessalonians 4. It is sometime after this catching up that the 70th week begins. By the way, you might want to turn to Daniel chapter 9. This is one of the most significant prophecies of all the Bible. Chapter 9, verse 24, 70 weeks are determined for your people and for your holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. That's 69. The street shall be built again, and the wall even in troublesome times. And after the 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. The end of it shall be with a flood, until the end of the war, desolations are determined. So when it says 7 weeks and 62 weeks, these are 69 weeks, and the word for weeks is sevens. 69 sevens. We believe that 69 sevens of years, which is 480, brings us to the day that Christ rode into Jerusalem on the donkey just before he was crucified. So this is the calculation of Sir Robert Anderson many years ago, and it has never been shown to be wrong. What one must understand is that according to verse 24, these 70 weeks are determined for whom? Yes, for your people in the holy city. This is the Jewish people. So the pronoun yours speaks of the Jews. What we have is a Jewish time period. You know when Jesus said, told them to flee and pray that their flight was not on the Sabbath? It's a Jewish time period. From history, we can learn that 69 of those weeks have been fulfilled, but the 70th week has no historical fulfillment. There's no evidence for it. It is viewed by many that God's time clock of these 70 weeks stopped at the end of the 69th week, and when that is when Christ rode into Jerusalem on the donkey, and Israel had rejected her Messiah. What happened is that the church age began, and in the New Testament, we learn of the great mystery of Jew and Gentile becoming one body. One of the very important things to learn in Bible prophecy is that Israel is not the church and the church is not Israel. One must learn that. There is no replacement of Israel in the Bible. Israel and the church are two separate programs in God's work on earth in mankind. Israel is the wife of God. The church is the bride of Christ, and God never mixes that picture up. So the church and Israel are two separate entities. It is most fitting, then, that the church is taken out before the 70th week. Here in this 70th week, Jew and Gentile become one. Then in the 70th week, it deals with the Jews again. So turn to Revelation chapter 6 now. With regard to the Antichrist's covenant, What all this covenant entails, I do not know, but an assurance of peace in Israel is a very big part of it. Revelation chapter 6 introduces us to the tribulation, verse 1. Now I saw when the Lamb had opened one of the seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures saying with a loud voice like thunder, "Come and see," and I looked, and behold, a white horse. And he who sat on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer. I believe this white horse pictures peace, a false peace, and the one who sits on it is the Antichrist. He had a bow, but no arrows. It seems that he conquers without shooting. We see how that it is possible with the World Economic Forum to conquer without shooting. That's what's happening there. Our own prime minister is already shot. He's under them. The Antichrist is an imposter. He is a false Christ, and he brings a false peace. When Jesus Christ, the real Christ, comes, he will also come on a white horse, but he will bring real peace. Revelation chapter 19. It also seems quite clear that this covenant will allow the Jews to rebuild their temple. This is very important. 2 Thessalonians 2, 3 through 4 says, "Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first, and the man of sin is revealed, and the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God." Here we see the temple exists in the tribulation. It is later, in the middle of the tribulation, that the Antichrist sets himself up in the temple as God. At that time, he causes sacrifice and offering to cease, and he takes over the temple. This is the abomination of desolation. What we learn from this is that it was in use before the middle of the tribulation. But the temple's not there today. The material is ready to build it. So he causes sacrifices and offerings to cease, and that means the temple is on the go. Now, for Israel to be allowed to rebuild their temple is nothing short of a miracle. Given the situation we have today, what would happen if the Jews took over? Yeah, World War III. So it seems that at least these two events, Israel's guarantee of peace and the right to rebuild their temple are part of the covenant that the Antichrist makes with Israel. I think that if Psalm 83 is prophetic of that which lies in the future, that it will be fulfilled shortly after the white horse. Now you can chuck this too if you don't like it. It's worth pondering though. I think it will happen shortly after the tribulation begins. I am not 100% sure yet myself whether it's prophetic, but it certainly sounds like our day, and we'll come to it yet. The white horse is immediately followed by a red horse. If white signifies peace, what does red signify? War. Yes, it's easy. So chapter 6, 3 through 4, "When he opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature saying, 'Come and see.' Another horse, fiery red, went out, and it was granted to him, to the one who sat on it, to take peace from the earth, and that people should kill one another. And there was given to him a great sword." If white pictures peace, red, of course, pictures bloodshed. This same Antichrist who came in through peace now is the cause of much bloodshed. So what is this bloodshed? If you like studying prophecy, please study this and tell me what this is all about at the beginning of the tribulation. So with the red horse, we are just into the tribulation, and now we have much bloodshed. What happens? I want to now make my first major proposal, and be a few more, and you might swallow a couple times when you hear them, but you can ponder them for what it's worth. I'm not sure yet Psalm 83 is prophetic. I think it is well possible. Nothing could sound more precisely like the situation in the Middle East today than Psalm 83, 1 through 7. Turn to Psalm 83. We'll come to it in a while. Before we read that, let me mention that now in later years, Psalm 83 has come under close scrutiny because there is a battle described here that some now believe has never yet happened. Bill Salas, anybody here familiar with the name? He has taught on this psalm more than maybe all others. He has a lot of information on this. He says it has never yet taken place. It is interesting to me that John F. Walward and J. Dwight Pentecost, who wrote some years ago, do not mention this psalm as prophetic for the future. It is only late that it has received a lot of attention. Now, it is debated whether the prophecy of Psalm 83, by the way, next on our map, our line, it is debated whether the prophecy of Psalm 83 was fulfilled historically or not. Some say yes, others say no. But even if this psalm was fulfilled historically, it could still have a far and near fulfillment, as many prophecies do. So that would not negate it from being a valid prophecy for today. Some hold that it was fulfilled in modern times. Of those, some think it was fulfilled in 1948. When the neighboring Arab nations sought to push Israel into the sea. Still others think it was fulfilled in the Six-Day War. Bill Salas and David Reagan agree that neither of these two wars fulfill the nations that are described here. Now, I think it is well possible that this prophecy could have a future fulfillment, although with my present understanding, I would not be dogmatic about that. The psalm does sound precisely like all the modern Arab nations around Israel today. If this battle lies in the future, like the battle of Ezekiel 38 through 39, nobody is sure when this battle will happen. It is believed by some that the battle of Ezekiel 38 through 39 happened before the tribulation. Of the war of Psalm 83, here's what one writer says. Therefore, many believe the war of Psalm 83 will happen soon, before the invasion of Ezekiel 38. So for some modern prophecy teachers, it is viewed that Psalm 83 battle takes place before Ezekiel 38 through 39, and that both happened before the tribulation. David Hawking suggests the possibility that the nations gathered by God in Ezekiel 38 and 39 may bring these nations with them when they come. I don't think that's correct, but he thinks that may be. Ezekiel says this, when it prophesies the nations that come, it says, many peoples are with you. So he thinks it may be there. Now, Psalm 83 is written by a man named Asaph. I think Trent's friend had this name. He called it Asaph, I think. No. But Asaph is credited with having written 12 psalms. Here's how Psalm 83 is structured. Verses 1 through 8 are the section that is viewed by some as prophetic. It describes Israel's enemies. The rest of the chapter is Asaph's prayer about what he wants God to do about Israel's enemies. So let's just read verses 1 through 8. Do not keep silent, O God. Do not hold your peace, and do not be still, O God. For behold, your enemies make a tumult, and those who hate you have lifted up their head. They have taken crafty counsel against your people and consulted together against your sheltered ones. You could circle that and see if you can figure out what that is, your sheltered one. They have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation. Does that sound like today, Arab nations? That the name of Israel may be remembered no more. Did you know that in many of the Arab schools, they don't even see Israel on the map? No, it's not even on the map. That they may be remembered no more. For they have consulted together with one consent. They form a confederacy against you. The tents of Edom and the Ishmaelites, Moab and the Hagrites, Gebal and Ammon and Amalek, Philistia and the inhabitants of Tyre. Assyria also has joined with them. they have helped the children of Lot, Selah. Now, I don't know of any scripture that more precisely relates the efforts of the modern Muslim nations around Israel today. The nations of Psalm 83 are all close around Israel. Well, we have taken just a brief overview of world governments and shown how they come to an end from the dream God gave to Daniel or Nebuchadnezzar, and Daniel interpreted it. In the end, Christ the rock is cut out without hands, and all human governments come down and are crashed to powder. And that happens, in my view, at Armageddon. This is the bigger context of the war of Ezekiel. So we have just now begun to look at a little more detailed view of the closer context of the war of Ezekiel 38. As I see it, the next thing on the prophetic calendar is the rapture of the church. We do not know how long after the rapture it is until the Antichrist is revealed. Antichrist, anybody know what Antichrist means? He's either against Christ, Antichrist, or instead of Christ, the false Christ. The peace is also a false peace that he brings. When the peace agreement has been signed and sealed, the tribulation begins. So you know that if a peace covenant is signed in Israel and the Antichrist has risen, I am wrong about the rapture happening before the tribulation. So you can look at these things. There's so much happening in the world. Prophecy students are very excited today. Those that are there are very few in our world.